Senate Education and General Government Committee to order. Welcome, everyone. We're at that stage of the session where things are moving fairly quickly. We have a full agenda today. I think that's code for the longer you speak, the more you put in jeopardy your chances of success. I want to, first of all, start off with a work session on House Bill 3619. Bob Turner, you're signed up here. We weren't necessarily going to take testimony on this, so you're okay. And so I would look for a motion on the dash twos, which adds administrators to this task force legislation. Senator Cruz is out today.
You ready to go? You want me to go?
Sure.
Okay. I move to adopt the dash two amendments to House Bill 3619A.
Senator Morris moves to adopt the dash two amendments to House Bill 3619A. Discussion? Objections? Seeing none, the amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3619A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morris moves House Bill 3619 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Seeing none? Objections? I know Senator Bonamici wants to vote on this, and maybe we will add her in later. Seeing no objections, House Bill 3619 is on its way to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Senator Morris, would you mind carrying that bill?
No, I'll be happy to.
We close the work session on 3619. And open up a public hearing and work session on House Bill 3617. We have several people set up to testify on this. Representative Tomei is here. And the speaker.
Do you want me to
We'll still be here. Sure.
Okay. Chair Hass, committee, my name is Carolyn Tomei. I'm state representative for House District 41, which is Milwaukee and Southeast Portland. I'm here mainly not to talk so much about the bill, but about the amendment. There was an amendment that we had proposed on the House side that passed, that committee that passed unanimously and passed, I think, the floor unanimously. It was regarding a dispute between the city of Milwaukee and the Clackamas County. Since that time, a resolution has been reached, and so we are proposing the dash 7 amendments would take out what had been the dash 4 amendments on the House side. And I think you all have the dash 7 amendments in front of you.
Yes.
And if you would like, I would be glad to invite up the county chair, Lynn Peterson, and County Commissioner Jim Bernard, and City Council Member Greg Chamoff, to let you know that I think we've all reached an agreement that is satisfactory for all parties, and we can withdraw that dash 4 amendment.
Good, everybody sitting together.
I'm between them.
Mm-hmm. And Mr. Chair, members, it's a pleasure to be back in front of you. Greg Chamoff, appearing in this case, is the president of the City Council of Milwaukee. Thanks to the good auspices of Representative Tomei, I think that we've worked out a structure for resolving our differences that we can effectuate between ourselves rather than needing to add something to the already revised statutes. We thank you very much for your consideration of these issues and how it helped bring us together. And with that, we'll go forth and do the best we can to reach further agreements.
Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you. Lynn Peterson, Chair of Clackamas County Board of Commissioners, but today in my hat, I wear the hat of actually a sewer district board, not as Clackamas County itself. And I think that's a big distinction because what we're trying to do here is work with the ratepayers that we have within the district and a wholesale customer. And I'm pleased that Representative Tomei really helped us come to a resolution of how to work this issue that's been a longstanding issue out. And with any luck, it will be a short negotiation, and we will have a contract that will meet the needs of both parties. So thank you.
Thank you. President Tomei, there's a underlying bill here. Could you speak to that in lieu of a speaker not here?
I would be happy to. This bill, 3617, the original bill without the -4 amendments, allows existing special districts or a county service district to continue to provide services for newly incorporated cities if the petitioners propose and voters approve of the continuance. And when, Lynn Peterson, thank you, as she said, there are a lot of urban areas within Clackamas County, and some of these unincorporated urban areas are wanting to incorporate, and they have special districts, water districts and sewer districts within their unincorporated areas that when they come into the cities, they want to be able to maintain those districts, so those special districts. So this bill provides for that.
Mr. Chair, committee members, Clackamas County has always been in support of this bill and the work of its good citizens to look at incorporation and the benefits that would be provided thereof. I think that this affords the opportunity for them to do so without dealing with some of the other political ramifications of getting rid of sewer districts and water districts that have been longstanding very proud communities to serve their area, and so we appreciate your consideration.
Questions? Okay. Thank you.
Welcome.
Do have some other people signed up. I'll just go down the list. William Wild, Dick Jones, Hasina Squires. Welcome, everyone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, Hasina Squires on behalf of the Special Districts Association of Oregon. In light of your statement that more talking has less likelihood of a bill's passage, I'll be very brief. With me today, to my left, is William Wild, who is a board member of the Oak Lodge Sanitary District, and to his further left is Dick Jones, who is a board member of the Oak Lodge Water District, but also is a member of the New Cities Convener Task Force. This bill is a result of some discussions that are taking place in Oak Lodge about a potential incorporation of a new city. Current statute requires that if a new city is formed and a special district is surrounded by it, the entire territory of that special district is surrounded by a new city, that those cities or those special districts are automatically extinguished. In this particular instance, we have a water district and a sewer district that have a very significant amount of infrastructure in the community and a longstanding level of support within the community. So the potential city formation individuals want to have the opportunity to put to the voters formation of a new city while preserving those two special districts that are fully surrounded by that city, and this bill will solve that situation's potential problem.
Okay, thank you.
My name is William Wild. I'm a homeowner residing at 2633 Southeast Tarbell Road in urban unincorporated North Clackamas County. I am involved with the group of citizens referred to as the New City Conveners. That group is studying the feasibility of incorporating the area between the Willamette River, Oatfield Ridge, the City of Milwaukee, and the City of Gladstone. I'm also the president of the Board of Directors of the Oak Lodge Sanitary District. Most of what I would say is in the written testimony that has been presented to you already. So in the interest of time, I'm not going to go over all of those items. I would just say that this group, the New City Conveners, in May and June of last year held three community meetings to gain input from the citizens about the issue of incorporation of the area. And the vast majority of people were reluctant to move further with conversation on the subject if it meant that their special districts would be extinguished. And so that's why we pursued changing the statutes to allow those districts to continue to provide services. Really, we haven't found any reason why this language exists in the statutes, and it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to us to take districts that have been serving citizens in the area, the water district since 1922 and the sanitary district since 1956, and have them cease to provide those services just because the area incorporated.
Good afternoon, Senator Hawes and committee members. My name is Dick Jones. I live at 3205 Southeast Vineyard Road in Oak Grove. I'm a member of the Oak Lodge Water District Board, but I'm not here representing the district. I'm here rather as representing the new city conveners, of which I am one. I first want to start by thanking Representative Hunt for the working with our group and bringing forth Senate Bill or House Bill 3617. This is giving new energy to moving forward with our project. The new city conveners gave extensive testimony on the original bill on January 14th to the House Committee, and I do support that. Our community would, if incorporated, be the most densely populated portion of Clackamas County. So we're not a rural area. We're a very urban area. The only thing is we don't have a city government, and we would like to move in those direction. Thank you. Appreciate your support.
Thank you all. Question, if what happens in the case of a dissolution or if this were to dissolve? I mean, how would that have played out without changes?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, in the event that the district would have been extinguished, all of the assets and liabilities would have been transferred to that new city.
Okay. So this happens how often?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I would like to see it never happen because I'm a big special district supporter. I can't think of an instance where a new city has formed. I've been representing special districts since 1995, and I can't think of an instance where a new city has formed and it has surrounded, the proposed territory has entirely surrounded a special district, and this has actually occurred.
Questions? Okay. Thank you all.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Jim Knapp.
Jim Knapp, 4401 Southeast Risley, Sewer District Number 1, Advisory Chairman at the Sewer Advisory for Clackamas County. I understand there's been a deal worked out through the amendment to Dash 4, and so I favor that. What I've been hearing in the back room, I just got here. So we need to move forward with the 3617 bill, and I approve of that as a lifelong citizen of the area. I think my testimony is with you today. I don't know if it's sent in. I encourage you to read it. It gives a brief history of what went on in the district, and there's some information there that's, I think, to gain a knowledge base of our area. I'm also an elected position at our water district. As Dick Jones stated, I'm not here to represent the district at all, but as a citizen and lifelong in the area, and that we need to move forward on these ideas. And may I ask, you had to add the question about the district and why it came about. We have very strong districts as far as infrastructure, both districts, the sewer and the water in the affected area are very monetarily actually have been supported by their constituents and ratepayers. So they want some autonomy, and they want to keep them alive. So thank you, and appreciate it.
Thank you. Speaker Hunt is here. We kind of got started on this bill before you got here. I hope that's okay.
Yep, absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm really just here to answer any question. I understand the bill has already been explained to you, and we are back to the original version of the bill with the adoption of the Dash A7 amendments. So we'd be happy to answer any questions you have about the content of the original bill.
Why don't, Why don't you identify yourself? And
for the record, Dave Hunt from Clackamas County.
And maybe summarize the origins of...
Sure, yeah. It really is a fairly unique situation where northern Clackamas County, very urbanized area, happens to be unincorporated for a whole series of reasons. But there's very much a discussion right now about incorporating that area. And I happen to support that. Some of my constituents in the back also support that. There will be a hearty debate, I can tell you, in northern Clackamas County about incorporation, and there should be. One of the barriers to even having that conversation was the fact that we found out that current statute requires that if the area is incorporated, that includes these special districts, in this case a water and a sanitary district, that those two special districts must fold, they must dissolve and become part of the city. That's just going to be a deal breaker for any discussion around incorporation because those special districts are very highly valued and supported. And so if there is an incorporation, we just wanted to make sure that people, that the voters have the option of incorporating but still continuing to contract with those special districts. Or ultimately they can vote to dissolve, but that would be a proactive decision made by people, not just a result of the incorporation action.
Thank you. Questions for Speaker Dave Hunt on this bill or on anything else?
Just
any one of the speaker bills.
Senator Morris.
Would that we could enjoy an 85-15 vote on a $40 million bond levy. That speaks volumes about how the public perceives the special district. That's amazing.
Yeah, no, and that's very true, Mr. Chair. Senator Morris, it is a unique dynamic in an unincorporated area where you don't have much of a sense of identity. Senator Metzger's district, which is the other side of the freeway, is also largely unincorporated. And it's an interesting dynamic where you've got special districts and the school district really are the ties that bind. And so there's a unique sense of loyalty to a special district, I think. And they've also done, both the special districts have done a very good job fiscally and otherwise.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you very much.
Lori Dreamer.
Chair Haas, committee members. I am Lori Dreamer, council president for the city of Happy Valley, 16,000 Southeast Misty Drive, Happy Valley, Oregon, 97086. No need to testify on the amendments. We're glad that those were pulled. That was our main speaking points. But I will submit the letter because in the second paragraph, we are not in opposition of the original bill, and we want to make sure that we support that with the county and with those special districts. We all work together in that region, and so we're glad that Milwaukee and Clackamas County will come to an agreement. So that's my testimony.
Thank you. Appreciate
Thank you.
It. Misty Drive in Happy Valley. I don't know why that hits me funny.
I haven't thought of that. Yeah. Used to be King Road.
Some people call it Unhappy Valley, depending on where they live.
Close the public hearing on House Bill 3617. And I'm going to move into a work session on House Bill 3617. And could use a motion on the A7 amendments.
And Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the -7A7 amendments to House Bill 3617A.
Senator Morris moves to adopt the A7 amendments to House Bill 3617A. Discussion?
Just briefly, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry I had to step out of the room when there was a discussion about how the -7 amendments came around, but let me just say that I'm very happy to support them. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further discussion? Is there objection? If not, the amendments are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3617-A7 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Senator Morris moves HB 3617-A as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Just, Mr. Chair, very briefly, I have a large growing group of citizens in my district who are part of A City by Choice, which is a group that's organizing to plan an eventual city in my district up in the Bethany area. And I'm happy to support this bill, especially with them in mind, as they strongly support the provisions of the original bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further discussion? Are there objections? Seeing none, we will pass House Bill 3617A to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Senator Bonamici, would you like to carry this bill?
I would. Thank you.
And I'll close the work session on House Bill 3617A. I'd like to reopen the work session on House Bill 3619A. We'll need unanimous consent to allow Senator Bonamici to vote. Objection? Seeing none, Senator Bonamici, how do you vote?
Aye. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
She votes aye. And then we'll close the work session on House Bill 3619. And I have anything else?
You adopted the amendment, right?
Today. Yes, yes. I think I should go to 3618.
Yeah.
Okay. Open up a public hearing and work session on House Bill 3688A. Representative Gelser is here. Administrator Richardson, if you could give us the summary on this.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3688A prohibits a provider of educational services from offering money or other consideration to a student, that student's parents or legal guardian, or another entity for the benefit of the student under certain circumstances. It provides exceptions, and it does define who the educational providers are. It does not allow the state board to waive the prohibition on providing the incentives. And it has an effective date of July 1, 2010.
Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. And if I may, you were very fortunate to have probably the best committee administrator in the building.
All right. Hands off her. She's staying here.
Colleagues, my name is Sarah Gelser. For the record, I'm Sarah Gelser. It's been a very long day. We've established who I am. I represent House District 16 in Corvallis. Senator Morse may no longer be willing to claim me as a constituent after this introduction. House Bill 3688 had an interesting outcome that I think points to why we have February sessions. During the course of our discussions in the online learning task force, there were questions that were raised about whether or not there were circumstances in the state of Oregon where families may or may not be paid to enroll their students in school. So we put in a placeholder bill to address that type of question, to make sure that state school funds were being used appropriately. And we began the process of talking with the Department of Education to try to understand, first of all, whether that would be legal in the first place. Second of all, whether it was happening at all. We were all discouraged to find that, in fact, it is not currently against state law to pay a student or pay a parent an incentive to attend a school. And that is not just about charter schools, that's about public schools. Let me give you an example of how that might work. In my local school district, we have open enrollment. We have a disparity in enrollment between two districts, or between our two high schools and between our two middle schools. Under current law, it would not be illegal for one middle school to say, enroll in our school and we will give you a $50 Fred Meyer gift card. Now, why would a school do that if we know that they are all underfunded? Because the funds that they receive, even within the district, are based on the number of kids that come. Now, to be clear, my school district isn't doing this, but we have learned under state law they could. That is a problem that needs to be fixed. In the meantime, we learned that the issue that had raised the question in the first place was less a matter of someone being paid to enroll in a school and more a matter of an inappropriate process of reimbursement for educational services. And the Department of Education has substantiated one of these complaints where a child enrolled in a third-party educational provider while they were also enrolled in a charter school. The arrangement with the charter school was that the family wrote a check to the third-party educational provider. If they completed the term at that third-party educational provider, then the charter school would reimburse them for those costs. However, if the parent lost a job, if the program wasn't working for the child and they left, they risked losing that reimbursement for public education services. This bill would not preclude a charter school, and to be clear, this is the All Prep Academy that we're talking about, and the situation that we talked about specifically in the House Education Committee was with a third-party educational provider called the Village Home. This would not preclude that ongoing relationship. The way it works today, All Prep Charter School recruits a homeschool student, says, come to my school, I'll give you a free homeschool curriculum and reimburse you up to $500 for services that you get from some third-party provider. Good example of this, one family wrote to me and said, I'm enrolled at All Prep Academy, I take 11 courses at Village Home, and at the end of the term, All Prep Academy will reimburse me for my science and math and social studies classes that are there. This would allow the student to continue taking those classes at Village Home, but it would take them out of the position of being the middleman. They would no longer have to write a check up front. The transfer of funds would happen directly between the All Prep Academy and the Village Home. When I talked with families who were enrolled at Village Home about this, how would you feel if instead of writing a check at the beginning of the term, you just went and you never had to worry about who was paying for who? Families were very happy with that idea, and one even indicated, gosh, I know someone else that wants to come to All Prep and do this at Village Home, but they can't because they don't have enough money to write a check up front to be able to take those courses. And ultimately, colleagues, I think that is the issue here. It is never appropriate to force a family to have to dig into their checking account to pay for public school services. House Bill 3688 simply clarifies that charter schools, public schools, any public educational entity will never be in the position of writing a check directly to parents, except for the circumstances that you saw there, in exchange for attending a specific school or on the condition of completing a particular program. Does not get in the way of scholarships, does not get in the way of classroom pizza parties, does not get in the way of any of those things, doesn't get in the way of computers for online charter schools, doesn't get in the way of anything else that's required or allowed by law. And I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have. And hope you'll pass the bill. It's a good bill.
Questions? Senator Morris?
maybe address the exceptions.
Yes.
If you could, please.
I can. The one thing about paper is that it's immediate, and your bill on a computer takes a second to come up on the screen.
While we wait for that, I...
Although it looks like Ms. Richardson has one that I can borrow. Thank you. So Chair Hass, Senator Morris, you were asking about the exceptions. These would be money or other consideration that is provided as required or allowed by law. That means that anything that we're currently doing that is required of a school, for instance, an online charter school that needs to pay for internet access for a student to be able to participate in the school, this would not get in the way of that. It also wouldn't get in the way of future initiatives the legislature might wish to undertake to look at places where you might have some kind of incentive. Again, you see that internet coming up again. I think we were particularly sensitive to that because of our work on the online task force. Anything that is for the use of the student and it's directly related to the educational program of the provider, so if you're looking at consumables for laboratory experiments or textbooks or globes or any of those kinds of things, and anything that's available to any other student that is participating in that activity. And so that's where you get at your pizza parties as rewards for good behavior and all of those kinds of things.
And just to clarify, Representative Gelser, this is for a prospective potential problem. It isn't to correct any abuses that have occurred, at least in recent past.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I am not aware of any school entity currently that has paid someone in exchange for attending a particular school. However, there is at least one substantiated complaint of someone that was denied reimbursement because they withdrew from a program. I also believe that the current problem is
that when you have a situation where people are being reimbursed for public school services, it creates an appearance of impropriety, and that kind of casts a dark pall on many educational providers and other charter schools, and I think that that is a danger to the health of public schools, to the health of charter schools, and to the health of reputable online charter schools. And I want to be very clear, this is not an issue that either Oregon Virtual Academy or Oregon Connections Academy has had an issue with.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Got some other people who would like to speak on this. Tim King.
Chair Hess and members of the committee, my name is Tim King, and I'm the director of the All Prep Schools. There are 10 of them. About 2,100 kids in all. All are run independently by their local boards. We have a waiting list in most of them of about 200 students. We expect probably another 130 more added to that waiting list in the spring. I'm going to speak in favor of the bill, but we are a little bit concerned, of course, that we're being used as the rationale for the bill. Many of our schools are a blended model, and by blended model I mean we believe very strongly in online education, but we also believe that that needs to be mixed with some face-to-face experiences. We think that you get the best of both worlds when you combine those two effectively, and that's what we try to do, and we're getting better and better at it, and feeling pretty good about that. We believe in a personalized, customized education. We emphasize the three R's, rigor, relevance, and relationships, and, of course, the fourth R, results. We also take the seven goals of the charter law very seriously, and we kind of summarize them as innovate, 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 get results, and then disseminate. We did, for the record, offer to reimburse families for enrichment courses. That's part of our face-to-face system through one of the schools. This is not true of all the schools, but through one of them at Village Home. At that school, we have things like robotics teams, and we do mock trial through that place as well. And once again, what we're trying to do is offer a very effective blended model in terms of education. We are stopping the practice. And so whether this goes through or not, we're just not going to continue that. It just seems to raise too many concerns. We don't see, just for the record, we don't see an incentive difference between a third-party billing system like what's being proposed and a reimbursement system. We think actually there's more incentive to the third-party billing that's being proposed. This was not, that particular idea was not ours. It was to accommodate the wishes of Village Home when we first set that up. Going to a third-party billing system would be fine as well for us, but we're just going to terminate the practice altogether. Other than that, if there's any questions, I'd love to answer them. And that's all.
Questions for Mr. King? I thank you for testifying and straightening that out. And how often do your students meet on premises, and where do they go? How does that work?
Village Home owns a premises in Beaverton, and it depends on the course. We have students that are enrolled in All Prep who are not enrolled in Village Home courses who will still go there because we've set up a computer lab there and they can do some of their coursework for us there as well. Some of them do that pretty regularly. Some of them, depending on the amount of time that whatever enrichment course they're taking meets, I think it varies pretty dramatically on the kid. Some of the kids just take one course, might only meet once a week, and the rest of the time they're doing our online. And other kids take a tremendous number of courses, as you heard earlier. Once again, we believe in a personalized education. We want to take every kid and try to match that kid with a customized system that's best for them. And it varies tremendously as far as what we end up offering.
Okay. So when you say, is it once a week, once a month?
It'd be at least once a week. With a lot of young people, it'd be more than that.
And where are all your students enrolled from?
For this particular school or for all of our schools?
For all of your schools.
For all of our schools, I think we have a student in every county in the state of Oregon.
But you have just one facility?
No, we have multiple facilities over the state. We call them learning centers, and young people get to go there to get tutoring, to get help, meet with a teacher. Our teachers also visit in the homes once every couple weeks as well. And then they're required to contact the students on a more frequent basis, obviously.
Mr. King, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Morgan Allen from the Department of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, Morgan Allen, Department of Ed. Just a few brief comments. The department and the superintendent are in support of the bill. I think the two main provisions which Representative Gelser really laid out very clearly are in Section 1, Sub 2, A and B, where we're going to be preventing cash incentives or some sort of cash payment for enrollment and parents paying out of pocket for part of the comprehensive educational program. That's a real equity issue. Obviously, some folks might not be able to pay for programs up front. And one other comment, Representative Gelser did a good job of laying out some of the issues that were raised in the House, concerns about scholarships, pizza parties, other things like that. I just wanted to add to that list for the record. Things like expanded option or community college tuition, higher education options would not be impacted by this bill for students, and kindergarten tuition payments also. We sort of ran those through the process, and those types of things would also be okay. So I would appreciate the committee passing out the bill, and would be happy to answer any questions.
Questions? Thank you. We'll close the public hearing on 3688A and open up a work session on House Bill 3688A.
And Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3688A to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Senator Morris moves House Bill 3688A to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Any discussion? I think Representative Gelser makes a good point in, at the very least, eliminating the appearance of impropriety, even when none is intended. So, seeing no further discussion, any objections? Seeing none, House Bill 3688A moves to the Senate with a do-pass recommendation. I will carry it. The public hearing and work session on House Bill 3688A. And I will open a public hearing and work session on House Bill 3702. Administrator Richardson, if you could give us a summary on this issue.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3602 permits, rather than requires, the Oregon Student Assistance Commission to give priority to full-time students in awarding the Oregon Opportunity Grants when there's not enough money to go around. It declares an emergency and would take effect upon passage. We don't have any amendments, and there's no fiscal impact or revenue impact.
And we have the OSAC people here.
John Wyckoff.
John Wyckoff is here. And Ms. McClain is here too, as well. Drew Hagedorn, representing the university system.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, for the record, my name is John Wyckoff, here in support today, representing the Oregon Community College Association. I'm just going to give a quick summary of the bill and what we're doing, and then let my two colleagues speak briefly as well. This issue came to all of our attention, I believe, the Friday before the February session began, when a very observant LFO legislative fiscal office analyst found a remnant in the statute regarding the Oregon Student Assistance Commission that was a part of the statute that was in place prior to the passage passage of the shared responsibility model, where we, among other things, added halftime students to eligibility for the Oregon Opportunity Grant Program, Oregon's only statewide need-based financial aid program. For the 4 years since then, we have, in all three sectors involved in the grant, the community college sector, the university system, and the independent private sector, have all been awarding halftime students. What LFO discovered was a piece of the statute that said that you shall prioritize full-time students when there are enough funds available to cover all students. I think we probably all three sitting up here are under the impression that it will probably be a very long time in Oregon before we're able to cover all eligible students. It will probably just be a long time before that, and that would mean that we will not effectively be able to continue awarding students. What this bill does is change the shall to a may, and basically aligns the statute with current practice and OAR. In OAR, the commission has the ability to they are recommended to make several to use several ways to bring the program into its budget and to make sort of reductions where necessary, and prioritizing full-time students is one of the levers that it is recommended that they can use. So they already have the authority to do that. We just want to, as I said before, align practice with statute so that nobody gets into trouble here, and so that we can all keep doing what we have been doing. We have the support of all the sectors involved in the program, and so this just, as I said, sort of keeps us going as we have been. And I think I can close with that and ask for your support. And thank you. Obviously answer any questions.
Thank you. Emily?
Sure. For the record, my name is Emily McLean. I'm the legislative director for the Oregon Student Association, and the Oregon Student Association is in support of this bill. In fact, our executive committee, which makes up both community college students and university students, heard about this and wanted to take a stance immediately in support of anything that would fix the problem within the statute and align the governance of the disbursement of the Oregon Opportunity Grant with the Oregon administrative rule that also governs the disbursement of the Oregon Opportunity Grant. And the one thing that I want to communicate along with our support is that, as you all know, the Oregon Opportunity Grant is the Oregon Student Association's greatest priority right now because it provides access to an affordable quality education for all Oregonians, and that's why this fix is so important, because we want it to be for all, and we hope that we can continue to work on the grant, but this is a quick technical fix that students are in support of.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. Drew Hagedorn here today on behalf of the Oregon University System. I think my colleagues have eloquently described the policy justifications for this small change, and we just want to lend our support to this bill as well. So thank you very much, and I'll close.
Thank you. Questions? We've got a one-word change. We don't get that.
I like these bills.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, we have three letters in the word, and we have three people to testify. So
that's pretty good.
Each person gets one.
Made it that way. I'm
finished. I'm M.
Okay. We don't have anybody else testifying on this. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3702 and open up a work session on House Bill 3702.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3702 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Chair Morris moves House Bill 3702 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Discussion? Seeing none. Is there an objection? Seeing none. House Bill 3702 moves to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Carriers?
That's a tough one to carry.
Yeah. Volunteers?
I'll carry it.
Senator Morris. Yes. Senator Morris will be the carrier. Okay, going through my files here of Revenue Committee and Education, and we are 3,600.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
All right. We'll open up a work session on House Bill 3,600. We have no one here to testify, and I will open up for discussion with colleagues. You know the bill here that would have made some changes in permitting costs and to development review permits. Senator Metzger.
Well, I'll be opposing this. as I mentioned the other day, and even after doing further research, even more opposed to it. I think this is, well, it does a number of things, and I'll point them out. One of which has been a lot of discussion many times in the Assembly about giving local jurisdictions fee increases, and sometimes $5 for a fee over and above the cost, and a lot of fervor is raised. This one gives the permission for local governments to raise fees without any guidance or without any limitation other than setting a schedule. So, for example, in Section 1, and this same thing with the city, it's a two-part, it applies to say, may charge an additional fee for premium services in excess of the actual cost of a permit. Well, premium services is not defined in this bill anywhere. So premium is going to be whatever the city or county says is premium. The additional fee for processing the permit would go into effect. I would liken the potential to this as to when you want to take an airplane right now. If you want to have now with Alaska Airlines, if you want to have a blanket on your seat, that's premium. That's $7. You want to take a bag, now that is now premium. If you want to get an aisle seat, that's premium. That used to be standard, but now it's considered premium. What really concerns me about this is that unlike and the testimony we had tries to compare this to the expedited review process in 197.360 for residential applications. But in the expedited review process in statute, it specifically articulates how that fee has to be structured to meet the cost of providing this. This legislation does not. It just tells the county or city. I understand they're very strapped, and so I could see why they would be enthusiastic about this, because this gives them absolutely free rein to raise fees on what they want to do. That's the first thing about it. The second part about it is when they adopt this schedule, they says it does not have to require applicants to use the premium services. Well, again, you don't have to require to have a bag. You don't have to have require. But if in fact, you're not being able to move forward with this in a, what you think is a timely manner, you by almost by default are going to have to go premium, which may have been in prior days, the standard. And I'll give another example of this, and Representative Esquil testified on this, on establishing a different line. But under the current statute, all of the costs are amalgamated among all the users. So, and of course, permits are down now because of housing, and so people have to lay off staff, and it goes up and down because it is fee generated. So if you have 100 applications and they're all paying the same amount of fee, and that's what the law currently says, it has to be the average cost of all. Some take more, some take less. You send your child to public school, may need more services than someone else, maybe brighter, but all the costs are shared equally among those students. What happens in this situation is that, let's say you have a group of these people who want to just move faster than everyone else, which is understandable. They're going to pay whatever this fee is. If it was $2,000 before, the city may say, for $8,000, we'll put our eyeballs on it and get you moving. These people move to a different this different section as defined in this legislation. So both the base fee and the extra fee, because you have to provide the service and then the premium, go into this other category. So now there's even less money for everybody else to get their services. And so how is that going to be done? It says in the legislation that they cannot reduce existing standards and timelines. Well, what does that mean? I mean, there's a lot of language that doesn't really mean anything. They say, well, we're not reducing them. We just don't have staff and money to do it, so this now is our new standard. So essentially, the premium service could become what was the standard service. And those who are in the standard service, there's less money to provide that service, maybe less planners to provide that service. And it really just separates the whole principle of that, collectively, some take more, some take less, but we're all paying for it. So, I just think it's bad policy, and I think giving without defining, if you're going to do something like this, at least under the expedited review process in statute, it says how you set this extra fee. This one just says a premium. We don't define it and allow them to set a fee as to what they feel is necessary for them to move things along. And I'd hate to see what some of those fees might be in my county that they might want to set in order to process your application in what you might think is a timely manner, but which may a few years ago have been the standard manner. So I can't support it.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I share many, if not most, of Senator Metzger's concerns. When I first read this bill, I thought and still think it's very broadly drafted, particularly with regard to the fees, the notwithstanding, and that cites the statute that applies to the county and the statute that applies to the city, but it's the entire statute, multi-page statute that covers the whole process, so I'm not sure what part of that they're intending to say, notwithstanding what part of the statute. But more importantly, I'm concerned about creating a sort of disparity in those who can afford to go faster can afford to go faster, and those who can't are stuck in the regular line. And the more I thought about it, I thought, well, maybe I could live with that, but how does it really work on the ground? And then I realized, I hope you have this letter that was submitted by the Association of Oregon Counties in your file. It's just dated today, with today's date. And I think there's an important statement in here, and I'll just read from this letter dated February 17th, 2010, from the Association of Oregon Counties. The Association of Oregon Counties has been neutral on this bill because we have heard concerns from county planners over perception of fairness for those applicants that cannot afford to pay or who are unwilling to pay for premium service. And it continues and says, we recognize that this bill would offer a service for developments that may create jobs, especially during these tough times. But I think the perception of fairness issue that was raised by the county planners, who are actually the people there working on this issue, is enough to, combined with the broad definitions and the broad drafting of this bill, that caused me great enough concern so that I will also join Senator Metzger in opposing this bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I share some of the concerns, but I also recognize that this has a sunset of January 2nd, 2015. So it's not setting something in motion that will forever be there, and you have to possibly retract it if it wasn't working. It does have a requirement that existing standards and timelines would be kept in place, but it gives an opportunity for, you know, large complex projects to be accelerated at a time, and I think that was the intent with the sunset, at a time when things, you know, are really in need of acceleration. And as we all know, you know, government doesn't move very fast sometimes. And to have a pathway that allows you to get into the ground before winter rains might well be worth giving it a go.
Well, I appreciate all of those comments, and I can't say I disagree with the points raised, especially given this economic climate where we need to get these projects going. We don't have time to keep working on this bill. It is a short session. We have about a half hour left as a committee to dispense of these bills. I will talk with the sponsor of this legislation to see, and I'll pledge to him to work and help co-sponsor something in the next session that will get at what he's trying to do with perhaps some more specifics, to fast track or whatever, expedite projects wherever we can. We need three votes to pass a bill out of this committee, and we don't have that. So
we could conscript our able.
She can't. She's very good, but she can't vote.
She's not quite that good.
So I am going to close the work session on House Bill 3600, and that is all the bills. Thank you for being flexible and passing this out. We do have an informational hearing on Monday of next week. We'll see you then. Until then,
we're
going to have information. Who do we have signed up on?
We're going to hear from the higher education sector on enrollment trends, recent enrollment trends, and on Senate Bill 1038 from Chalkboard and sponsored by Senator Cruz and
innovation.
Okay.
Informational hearing.
Information on innovation.
And are they up or down?
Well, they're fluctuating in interesting ways.
And they're complex.
Types of people and, yeah.
And counterintuitive.
And I need to say that when I first saw 3688 and glanced at it,
you
thought it
on the record.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
that's all right.
Okay.
I thought it was a bill that would prohibit families from paying their students for getting good grades.
Oh,
oh yeah.
Second, let me vote on
there
that.
There goes the tooth fairy.
Yeah. That would actually
You're busted, Mom.
We aren't your
I don't mind saying that.
I'm sorry.